Well, my name's Ken. I'm a staff here at Every Nation Melbourne. Welcome here. And we're starting a new series called The True Vine. And we're going to be just taking our time going through John chapter 15. If you've been spent some time in church before, it's quite a famous part of the Bible, John chapter 15. And it talks about Jesus saying he is the true vine. And there's lots of ideas of relational connections and intimacy and fruitfulness. And, you know, this chapter of the Bible has spoken to me a lot because I've always wanted to be a fruitful person. I've always wanted to be a productive person. You know, when I first became a Christian, I had dreams of changing the world for Jesus and going on the campus at Melbourne University. That's where, you know, I was involved in campus ministry all the way back in 1998, been praying for revival at Melbourne University for over 20 years. And it's like, God, I want to see fruitfulness. And, I didn't see a lot of fruitfulness. And I always thought, God, what's going on? What's happening? I didn't sign up to follow you just to go through times where I didn't feel fruitful. No one says, Jesus, I want to follow you and not be fruitful. Jesus, I want to follow you and I just want to go through the motions. Jesus, I want to follow you and have no impact on the world at all. Maybe someone said that. Maybe someone said, I want to follow Jesus and make no difference. No, when I gave my life to Jesus, I said, that's it, I'm in. In for a penny, in for a pound, go the whole way. I wanted to change the world. And there was just seasons of where I felt completely unfruitful. And so John 15 has always spoken to me. It's always spoken to me. And this first part particularly encouraged me. So, first of all, I just want to explore this idea with you. There's a biblical theology of gardens. So this speaks to me. I'm a gardener. Springtime, it's a new season. I have a garden bed at home that's just laying fallow over winter, and there's some weeds, and I've got to clean it all out and stuff. But I'm going to plant this spring, and I'm believing for my tomatoes and my beans and my cucumbers, my basil. That's generally what I grow. It basically provides a salad over summer. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing the fruit of my labor from the garden. But when I say that there's a biblical theology of gardens, it means that the idea, that the motif, or the imagery of gardens is significant all the way throughout the Bible. I mean, humanity is found in the Garden of Eden, the story that's told about the beginning of humanity, about humanity's rebellion, everything about what God had in store for all of us is that starts in the garden. So the very beginning of the Bible starts in the garden. The very end of the Bible, we find a city that's built up around a garden. That's kind of like the idea of, so at the end of Revelation. So if we weren't to have fallen and rebelled against God, the idea was we start in the garden, then humans grow and develop technology and cultivate, and they build up a city with a garden at the center, which is what we find in Revelations 21 and 22. So gardens are important. We talked in our last series about how there was a test in the garden. We are image bearers of God. That's what makes human life valuable, is that we bear his image. Creation is meant to look at us and go, oh, is that God? No, it's Ken. Oh, but I see God's image shining through Ken. That's the privilege that we have. That's what makes us special. We were meant to, represent him to all of creation and to work in the garden for him. But we rebelled against God. We decided we didn't want a relationship with him. We wanted to take a shortcut to learn about good and evil. We're always meant to learn about good and evil by being in a relationship with God. But instead, humans wanted to take a shortcut and eat from the fruit of the knowledge from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And they failed that test in the garden. But then another test was passed in the garden. Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus, the second Adam. He passed the test. It says, not my will, but your will be done. And where one human rebels, another human obeys. And everything is changed for the good. And I was just reading in my Bible actually this week with a friend of mine, talking about there's two bodies in a garden as well. So the first, when God first makes humanity, he shapes Adam as the story is told. The story is told that God shapes Adam from the dust of the earth. And, you know, you can imagine just a human body on the ground, lifeless. It's just an empty shell. But then what God does is he breathes life into it, and then a new creation is formed. And if you read John chapter 19, I've never noticed it before, so I just thought I'd share this for you for free while we're talking about the biblical theology of gardens. John 19 verse 41, it talks about how Jesus' lifeless body is placed in a cave in a garden. So one body, the first Adam, is lifeless. God breathes his life into it, born again, it comes alive, and he is now the first of the new creation, of humans. And then the second Adam, Jesus, he dies. He's laid in the garden as well. Just like Adam, his body is just there with no life in it, but then raises again and a new creation starts. I thought that's cool. Two Adams, two gardens, two bodies, two lives being given. And so there's a biblical theology of gardens. And, you know, if you're a garden like me, that's pretty cool. But you might think, you know, Ken, I don't have a green thumb. I have a black thumb. I'm known as a notorious plant murderer. Has anyone tried to grow indoor plants and they just seem to shrivel up and die? Is that you? You know, it's Cedric. Okay, cool. Thanks, Cedric. What you should get is succulents. Succulents or cactus? They're very hot. You kill them as well. Okay. So you might say, Ken, you're a gardener, I'm not. Well, you know what? There's a biblical anthropology of gardens as well. What I mean by anthropology is the Bible says something about humanity. And there's a biblical anthropology of gardens. That is, human beings, no matter who you are a gardener. In the sense that the first Adam was called to tend to a garden. He was a gardener. He was a cultivator. You are a cultivator. You cultivate something. It might not be fruit and vegetables and might not be flowers. Maybe it is, but you cultivate something. You are a gardener. You might cultivate, the next generation by raising children. That's growing them. That's tending to them. That's looking after them. That's making sure that they're fed and all that kind of stuff. You might cultivate finances. You might be investment. You might be trying to grow finances. You might cultivate a community involvement. Or whatever job you do, there's an element where you are cultivating, where you're being a gardener of some kind of resource. Maybe it's human resource. Maybe it's information resource or something. But you are a gardener of some sorts. It's what we were meant to do. It's what we were always meant to do. It's what we were always meant to be. We are meant to be gardeners. We're meant to go through all this creation, and wherever there is brokenness, wherever there is sickness, wherever there is corruption or whatever, we're meant to bring healing and we're meant to make it better. We're meant to develop this world. Not in a, you know, kind of a hyper-consumeristic kind of exploitation of creation. No, we're meant to tend to it and grow it, bring the best out of it. In every sphere, economic, relational, educational, creative. You know, maybe you're creative here, writing music. You're cultivating, you know, culture. That's where we get the word culture from. So there's a biblical anthropology of gardens. That is, to be human is to cultivate. And we get that. We get that from God. God's the ultimate gardener. And we read that right here. This is what really stands out to me. Because we all know this verse. We all know that Jesus is the true vine. I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He takes away every branch that does not bear fruit in me. He prunes every branch that bears fruit so that it will bear more fruit. You are clean already because of the word that I have spoken to you. I am the true vine, Jesus says. So this is Jesus speaking. And my Father, if you're a Christian here today, your Father is the gardener. What does the gardener do? He takes away every branch that does not bear fruit in me. He prunes every branch that bears fruit so that it will bear more fruit. You are clean already because of the word that I've spoken to you. Why is there a biblical anthropology that humans are cultivators, that humans are gardeners? Because we bear the image of God. And who is God? Who is my Father in heaven? Who is your Father in heaven? This is the words of Jesus. Don't take my word for it. This is Jesus speaking. My Father, your Father is the gardener. The Father is the gardener. This is the imagery that Jesus is painting. He's communicating a truth, right? He's communicating something. He's using the metaphor, the imagery of a gardener to say something about the nature of who God is. So this is the imagery that Jesus is painting. He's saying that God, our Father, you know, I had a good father who cared for me and loved me, passed away now, but he was a great, great man. And some of us, you know, I know how lucky I am to have a good father. Some of us have fathers who haven't been as involved and connected and caring and tending and cultivating of our lives. And that might be you today. Oh, I just want to share this good news with you. There's a Father in heaven who is a gardener of your life. And this is what he does. He moves through his garden. He moves through his garden of all of creation to look for fruit. That's what I do. I plant my tomato plants and I look for fruit. Actually, my mulberry tree was, I have a mulberry tree with mulberries on it, and it was all kind of bare over winter, and now it's started to bud with new leaves, and even the fruit, I can see the green fruit, soon it will turn, you know, deep red / black. Can't wait to eat all those mulberries. But, you know, I look for fruit, and that's what God does. God the Father, the gardener, he moves through his garden to look for fruit, because fruit reflects on the gardener. The more fruit there is, the more glory. In verse 8, if you were to read further on, and we'll look at in coming weeks, in verse 8 of chapter 15, it talks about, by this I am glorified, that you, my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. The gardener, I can point to a bag, you know, a bowl of tomatoes that are nice and beautiful and red and just this organic and they taste delicious and, you know, Cedric has partaken of many of my tomatoes before and, you know, there was an element where, you know, Cedric said, oh, Ken, those are awesome tomatoes. I think he even said this. I'm not making this up. You know, Ken, I would just go home. I would just eat those tomatoes on pasta. And I was just like, because that's all he had was pasta and tomatoes back as a student. And, you know, and I feel good about that. There was glory that was coming to me because of the fruit of my garden. So God, the Father, he moves through the garden looking for fruit because fruit reflects on the gardener. Like I said, I have a gardener, and often, like I said, I have a garden, and my identity as a gardener is connected to the garden. The more fruitful, the better the gardener that I am. But with God, it's a little bit different. Obviously, his identity is connected in a way, but not in the same way as me. For God, it's a little bit different. His garden is fruitful because it's his nature to overflow. God's nature is to overflow. It's why he created in the first place. It's why he created the angels and the heavens, and he created the earth and us and the universe. He created because he wants to include. He wants his overflowing love. It's got to go somewhere, and he's poured it out on us. With God, it's a little different. His garden is fruitful of creation because it's his nature to overflow. To overflow in his abounding love and his grace and his favor, his creativity, his desire for real, authentic community. And it's his nature to be fruitful. And it goes back to what I was saying before. We have a desire to be fruitful, don't we? We want to make an impact. Not many of us go around saying, I want to make as little difference in the world as possible. I don't want to be fruitful in friendships. I don't want to be fruitful in my workplace. I don't want to be fruitful in my achievements. Sometimes we can get there. Sometimes if we're really depressed, I suppose, and I've been there at times, I just want to give up. But normally speaking, we want to be fruitful. We want to make a difference. We want to be fruitful in different parts of our lives. That's something that God has deposited in us. It's part of what it means to be image bearers. You know, our lives are so much more than the 9-to-5 grind that the Western world says it is. To buy stuff that we don't need. You've heard this before. To impress people that we don't like. Life is so much more than that, isn't it? And it's to be fellow gardeners with our Father, who is the ultimate gardener in all of creation. All of it, every aspect of it, every sphere. Do you know what I mean? In government, in education, in arts, in media, in sports, in even computer gaming. My kids would love me saying that. You know, to be fruitful in all these areas. So going back to verse 2, it says, he takes away every branch that does not bear fruit in me. He prunes every branch that bears fruit so that it will bear more fruit. The Father walks through the garden doing his job as a gardener, looking for good things, looking for bad things. That's what I do. I look for weeds, I pull them out, I look for things that are fruitful and, you know, I water them extra and all that kind of stuff. I tend to my garden. That's what God does. He walks through the garden and he takes away, he's looking for bad things, he's looking for good things. If you think about this imagery, this biblical theology of gardens, that's exactly what God did at the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1 and 2, in the Garden of Eden. He was always walking through the garden, looking for good things, looking for bad things, walking through the garden one day, Well, normally what he'd be just walking through the garden and say, hey, where's Adam? Where's Eve? Let's chill, let's chat, let's see what they've invented today, what progress they've made in extending the garden, in growing it, in developing human culture and technology and all that kind of stuff. How are they doing? And one day he was walking through the garden and things weren't the way they should be. He walked one day and found something wrong. He found out that the ones that he entrusted his creation to had said, we don't want to do that anymore. We want to do our own thing. We don't want to be with you. We've rejected you. And we want to be our own gods, rules of our own destiny. He's always walked through the garden because he's the gardener. One day he walked in the garden of creation. He found something wrong and he dealt with it immediately. He dealt with it immediately by kicking Adam and Eve out of the garden. They didn't belong there anymore. They said, well, if you've rejected it, then that's okay. You won't have this anymore. But he also dealt with it in the long term. He said, I'm going to fix this problem. You've made a problem and I'm going to fix this. You've made a problem, but I still love you and I'm going to fix this. Can't be in the garden and our relationship has changed, but I want it to be back to the way it was, and so I'm going to fix this. So he dealt with it in the long term by sending his son Jesus to pass a test in another garden. Basically what he did is Jesus, he pruned the broken, well, God the Father, he pruned the broken branches, but he also had a plan to graft them back in. Remove, but one day to bring back. So God walked through the garden in Genesis 1 and 2, and that's just indicative or an example of what he continues to do. He still walks through the garden of his creation. He still walks around looking into your life, into my life. So God walked through the garden and he still walks today. He looks in your life, he looks in my life, he looks in the life of this church. He knows everything, right? God knows everything, but he wants to be involved. He doesn't want to be at arm's distance. He wants to be intimately close to each and every single one of us. And so he looks in my life and it's like he's walking through the garden and he's moving the leaves out the way and he's walking up close and he's inspecting closely and says, oh, Ken, there's something here that's not right. Oh, Ken, look at this fruit, Ken. You don't even know, but this is how you're growing. This is how you're glorifying me. And this is what the difference that you're making in the world. And you can't even see it, but I just want you to be encouraged. Oh, but there's this other stuff. Ken, I'm going to deal with this. Because you know why, Ken? Because I love you. I'm involved in your life and I want you to be more fruitful than even you want to be. We all want to be fruitful, right? We all want to make a difference. As much as I want to be fruitful, I have a father who is a gardener who wants me to be more fruitful still, and he will do whatever it takes. So he looks in my life, in your life, in the life of the church. He knows the good stuff, the bad stuff, but he cares. So he looks because he's a good gardener. There might be lots broken in your life. You might feel like, if I'm a garden, then my life is just like a sandpit. There's nothing growing here. In fact, you know what you find in sandpits? Bits of broken glass, perhaps, or whatever. I'm the opposite of life. Well, there might be lots broken in your life, but God has always had a plan to put us. God has always had a plan to put us where we can have life. Always. He's always had a plan to put us where we can be fruitful. I've spent way too much time being worried about my own fruitfulness instead of talking to my father who was the gardener and listening to his heart and his plan for me. Because if I could walk in this truth, live out this truth and trust this truth that God has always had a plan to put me where I can have life, then I think I would have stressed a whole lot less. I would have been depressed a whole lot less. Okay, God, I'm trusting you. I'm trusting that you're working in me. I'm trusting that you're pruning things that need to be cut out. I'm trusting that you're grafting in things that need to be there. So, God has his plan for us. And God, our Father, if you're a Christian here today, who is the gardener, he walks and he sees the pride of his garden. So Jesus says, that his father is the gardener. He also says that he is the true vine. I find that interesting that Jesus says he's the true vine, and we're going to look into this more next week. But Jesus as the true vine, well, there's an implication there, isn't it? If he's the true vine, then that must mean there are false vines. There must be things that we can be connected to. There must be things that we are in relationship with that aren't the place where God has us planned to be, where we can have life. Because if you read the rest of John, it talks about us as branches and which source of life are we connected to? Are we connected to the true source of life, Jesus, the true vine, or are we connected to another source of life? Jesus said he is a true vine, so there must be false vines. The things we connect to, what's a false vine? It's a thing that we connect to, or the things that we connect to that don't give us life. It's a source maybe of temporary comfort, but of long-term fruitlessness. It can be bad things, addictions. Addictions are comforting, right? You know, whatever it is, substances, behaviors, going shopping. For me, it's been escapism by reading too much or playing computer games too much, all that kind of stuff. Addictions, substances, bad things. They can be a false vine, a false source of life. I can be connected to that, and rather than it being God's plan for me to have life, it's the opposite. I've turned away from God's plan to have life. I've sought comfort elsewhere. I've plugged into a vine that doesn't give me life. And ultimately, I'm much less fruitful than I would otherwise have been. So it's bad things. Could be bad things, addictions. Could also be good things. Good things can also be false vines. Relationships, careers. For me, it's been ministry. Ministry for such a long time has been a false vine in my life that I have connected to. Can I talk about this? Can I be real? Is it all right? So some people should be shocked. He's saying ministry has been a false vine? Isn't that what we're all meant to do? No, for me, ministry absolutely has been a false vine in my life. Something that I've sought my identity from. Something that I've sought fruitfulness from. Something that I've wanted to be, to give me identity. And, you know, it was many years where I'd just be like, I don't want to do this anymore, because ministry is a poor vine to give me life. It's a false vine. I wanted to give up so many times because I wasn't plugged into the true vine. Even though I'm talking about Jesus all the time, even though I'm up here and people are looking to me and say, oh, Pastor Ken, you know, he's such a holy man. So teach us more, Pastor Ken. No one has ever said that to me. But, you know, being connected to Jesus. Ministry has been a false vine that's led me to seasons of fruitlessness. Instead, I've chosen to be connected to the true vine, Jesus, which ultimately makes me more fruitful in my ministry because Jesus brings fruitfulness. God has always had a plan to put us, has always had a plan to put me where I can have life. That's connected to the true vine, to Jesus. False vines are false gods, and false gods are false givers of life. There is a true giver of life. It's a true vine. And my Father, who is the gardener, wants to make sure I'm connected to the true vine. And so if I'm connected to the false vine of ministry, he'll let my life dry up. So I go, God, what's wrong? What's going on here? Why am I not achieving the things that I thought I would achieve? Why aren't I making the difference I thought I would make? What's going on in my life? How come I'm not happy? Here I'm serving you, God. And God's saying, oh, Ken, you're connected to the wrong vine. I don't need you to serve me, Ken. I want you to be in relationship with my son, the true vine. And then the fruitfulness that you know you are capable of will come. Does that make sense? Maybe Jeff, do you mind joining me up here? So there's this picture of God as a father who walks through creation and he inspects his garden. You know, sometimes inspections can be scary. Is that right? Like, you know, if you at work and your boss comes in and is inspecting your work, or for my kids, I tell them to clean their room, and I go in and I inspect to see how clean their room is. Do they put their clothes away properly, or is it just all shoved underneath the bed? The amount of times they try to get away with that, it's incredible. So inspections can be scary, but God the Father, as an attentive gardener, isn't scary to me. It gives me hope. God the Father, as a gardener who inspects his creation, you know, ultimately of the whole universe, but also inspects me as a part of his creation, that gives me incredible hope. For us as a church, as God inspects every nation, Melbourne, and looks through it and sees the good things, the bad things, that gives me hope. The reason why it gives me hope is that because God is a good gardener. God cares. He wants to bring fruit. He wants to bring fruit more than I want fruit to be brought. God as a good gardener, God as a skillful gardener, I can trust him to cut out the things that need to be cut out. I can trust him to bring in the things that need to be brought in. I can trust him that his intention is to bring fruit because he's glorified by it. He wants fruitfulness. And I'm not even talking about numerical growth for the church. I'm not even talking about finances for me. I'm talking about ultimately just relational growth with him that brings forth fruit, that brings life. Inspections can be scary, but God as gardener gives me hope. I hope it gives you hope as well. I don't know where you're at. Maybe you've been thinking, gee, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I don't know how I can be used by God. I don't know what area of creation God wants me to cultivate just yet. Some of you guys are students and you don't really know what you're doing. Some of you have been working for 20 plus years and you're thinking, what, maybe I need to change career. Maybe something needs to change in my life. Something needs to change because I don't really feel like that where I am right now is where I'm supposed to be. Well, I hope that as God walks through your garden, the garden of your life, that that would give you hope, that he would inspect you, that he would see things in your life that maybe he's challenging you to cut out, and maybe he would bring into your life certain things, and that you would submit your garden to his tender touch, even as he rips out weeds and brings in other stuff. Fertilizer to see you grow. Now God, he wants to grow this church to see it fruitful. That's us as individuals, that's us corporately. Will we let him prune us so that we will be more than fruitful? Even when we're fruitful, he prunes us so that we can bear more fruit, and we'll be looking at that in future weeks. This is about a 6-week series, I think. We'll just be going through it slowly, drawing out different ideas. But today we're looking at, because I think this is forgotten, it's overlooked a lot, that we have a Father who is intimately involved in our lives to bring forth maximal fruitfulness. There's so many people who pay a lot of money to go hear human potential gurus. Tony Robbins or whoever. You go hear these motivational speakers. What do they want? They want to be more fruitful. They want to have more impact. Well, I have a Father in heaven who created the universe, who knows exactly what needs to be cut out, exactly what needs to be grafted in to make me as fruitful as I possibly can be. So I'm going to stop striving to bring forth fruit in my life. Let me ask you these questions. Will we let him prune us so that we will be more fruitful? Let me ask you this. What does God want you to give up? Is this something that he's been challenging you with? So this is where the rubber hits the road, right? It's not just a motivational sermon. It's a challenge. Will we let God tend to us to bring forth fruit in our lives? So, wrapping up, as an individual Christian, this whole idea of God as my Father who is a gardener, an image that I bear as a cultivator in creation, an image that I bear with a desire innate in me to make a difference in the world. This whole concept gives me hope. And this is the biggest part, I suppose. You know, when I talked about ministry being a bad, false vine, I worked so hard in my own strength to bring forth fruit. Now, I mentioned before, been praying for revival at Melbourne University for 2 decades. That's a long time. I would even get up before 10 o'clock to get there. Sometimes. I mean, that's a student joke. You know how students stay up late, right? I mean, and then they get up late. Even more radically, I would get up at 5:30. I'd drive in from Hoppers Crossing, park at Cemetery Road, next to the cemetery, walk into Melbourne University, and meet with 2 or 3 other guys and just pray for God to move powerfully at Melbourne University, year after year after year. And that's nothing wrong with that. That's good, actually. It's probably good. But I think there was an element where I was trying to make something happen in my own strength. It's trying to exert fruit. My mulberry tree, I don't hear it groaning at all. It's like going, argh. It's not trying to make the fruit pop out. It's just existing. It's just there. Its roots are in the soil and the sun's come out and is shining on it and leaves are coming and mulberries are forming on it. It's not exerting fruit. It's just giving forth fruit by its existence because it's in correct relationship with the soil, correct with the earth, and in correct relationship with the sun. As an individual Christian, I hope this gives you hope. The good news is for you and for me and this church is that we don't have to work harder to be more fruitful. Don't hear me say you have to work harder. You do not have to work harder. I mean, that's the world's way, right? Work harder, stay up later, get up earlier. This is how I become more fruitful, and this is good news for us today. I allow the gardener who is my Father to do what he wants to do in my life, whether it's in the short term painful, so whether it's painful or joyful, because I know that he sees the bigger picture and he has a plan, he has a purpose, and he wants me to be fruitful for his glory. I have a Father who is a gardener. I have a Father who is a cultivator. Maybe I'm in a season, maybe you're in a season where there is a lack of fruitfulness. What's the answer? Is it to work harder? Is it just to give up and be depressed? The answer has always been, is and has always been, to trust in the gardener, in our Father in heaven. He wants fruit. He wants me to be fruitful. There might be pruning, but any cutting is done for my healing. Any cutting is done for my healing. So it's springtime, season of growth, season of fruitfulness, season to plant new things, season to get rid of the weeds that have sprung up over winter. This is the season, I think even, just to speak it out over us as a church, individually, corporately. This is the season of life, of relationship, of intimacy, of fruitfulness. This is a season to enjoy. Enjoy. Enjoy what God is doing in your life. Enjoy how he is wanting to bring more fruitfulness from you as he connects you to Jesus, the true vine. This is a season to enjoy. Embrace. Embrace what your Father is doing. I'd like to invite Tina to come on up just to wrap up for today. Thanks, Tina.